Hello, and welcome to another episode of Unboxing Women, where we explore the gender gap in the music and entertainment industry. If you're active in the music business, an independent artist, a musician, or are just curious about how it all works, then this pod is for you. My name is Dana Rex, and with me is my friend Micah Rose, and we are both independent recording artists based in Europe. After having been called a bitch for knowing what we want, we were fed up and decided to be such a bitch and reveal everything that's going on behind the scenes. You can listen to us on your favorite podcast platform and on our YouTube channel. Today, we are chatting with Michaela D. Jordan, who was with us in Season 2, Episode 14, where they introduced us to their management company, Golden Poppy Music, and talked about their own experiences on stage as a singer and musician. We are now in Season 5. Can you believe it? How are you? How have you been?
I am great. Life has like exploded since I last saw you.
That's really good. That's insane. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Well, very good. Very good. Exploded in a great way. Like life has just bloomed since the last time I talked to you.
All right. Well, tell us what you've been up to. How is Golden Poppy Music?
Golden Poppy is great. We currently have a slew of artists all over the US and some bouncing back and forth between the US and Europe. And we've actually gotten to hire our first employee, which is amazing.
Wow, congratulations.
So it's not just me. Yeah, it's not just me anymore. I had this absolute rock star of an intern last year, and I decided to keep her on part-time. Wow. And Golden Poppy's great. You know, we're having just a string of awesome releases. We have Lovely Ocean coming out. They just came out with an awesome new single. We have new signings. We have Mob Blues, who just signed with us. They are this really cool, like, hip-hop jazz band from Philly. And then we have another Philly artist that signed on called JJX, who is very much like, think like Lenny Kravitz meets Tool. It's just really interesting stuff. Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool. And it's this guy like shredding guitar with a badass drummer behind him. So yeah, there's just
really cool.
There's a lot of cool stuff going on with Golden Poppy. Yeah.
Nice.
That's so cool.
Yeah, 16.
Oh, I'm still processing those musical combinations.
I know. I'm still processing the musical combinations. It's been moving very quickly this year, and I'm just kind of trying to, take it all in, really, and like learn to enjoy it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's great.
Yeah,
you're an employer now.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. Well, to remind the listeners and viewers of what Golden Poppy Music does exactly. So, this is your management company, right?
Similar, yes. We are an artist-focused alternative to management and record label services. Okay. So what we do is we provide artists all the services of management, booking agencies, and a record label, similar to like a 360 company. But the way that we do it is the artists are not locked into a contract, and they are not having to sacrifice any percentage of their royalties, any percentage of ownership over their work. They come in and just pay a flat hourly rate to Golden Poppy, as opposed to us taking anything from them. Mm-hmm. And they remain in complete control. Every decision has to go through the artist.
Cool. Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. I remember that being quite a new thing, or at least it's the artist-based approach, isn't it? So tell us a little bit about what you're doing now, because you are also active as an artist. I think mainly, yes. Really, you're foremost active as an artist.
It's about 50-50 at this point. Okay. You know, Golden Poppy is what it is because I'm an artist. And I created that company because I wanted it to be what I was looking for in a record label or management company. Mm-hmm. And my artist name is The Seatees, T-H-E-S-E-A-T-E-A-S-E. Did not realize how much I'd have to spell that when I picked the name. I have to spell it all the time. But, so that's been my main gig. And it's been really great. This past April, I got to go to Amsterdam, and I actually got to perform in Amsterdam at Club Delphine. which was very cool. Yeah, I got to like perform like with Candy Dolfer's band and stuff. It was super exciting. And then I came back and I opened for the Stone Foxes here. And I'm about to have like my first major like kind of headlining gig at this place called Venice West out here.
That's so cool.
The Whiskey A Go-Go, the Viper Room. Yeah, the CTs has been just really blossoming. It's been getting like international attention, international radio play a little bit.
That's really cool.
Yeah, so, and we just
Viper
did it.
Room, is that still open? Is that still a thing?
I'll give you the tea. Hold on. Okay, so.
Spill.
There is this awesome, like, older punk lady that works security. She's the head of security at the Viper Room, and she, like, likes me for some reason. And I, like, asked her about it last time I was there, because I love going there. And she gave me, like, the real details. She's like, every band that's coming to play through here is saying that might be the last time the Viper Room's going to be open. And she was like, they're going to try to keep pushing it back and pushing it back because it is a historical place.
Yeah.
And the music scene here in LA is furious. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to tear it down because it's just it's like a single floor and then a basement level. Mm-hmm. And it has like a little venue down in the basement. It's like an acoustic lounge and then the main venue upstairs. And what they're trying to do is level it and build a venue on the bottom and then high rises on the top. Now it's in this neighborhood called West Hollywood, which is this very like high end neighborhood. Like the condos there are like millions of dollars. So everybody's issue is nobody who is paying that much money to live in a high rise on the Sunset Strip is going to like want to live above a venue. Viper Room.
Cause, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because the Viper Room is like really raucous and like that's what's great about it. It's still kind of gritty, but it's like a vampire club. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And
I've been there.
I love it. It's my favorite place. It's my favorite place to play and my favorite place to go. Like, so you know, they are just fighting tooth and nail to not tear it down. The rumor is spring 2023. The website still says that they are booking out into March. So, fingers crossed.
I thought it was already done because I had seen like an article over here in the press in Europe saying that it was over and it was going to be the last evening or the last weekend and it was done. So I'm surprised that it's still going and they're trying to push it back.
Honestly, I'm not surprised because we had a situation like this in Cardiff, which I know is not the scale of LA, but there's this one pub Cardiff. That everybody went to. Yes, Cardiff. I'm sorry. 140,000 people. Not the scale of LA. However,
it's like Boston.
Big music scene. It's smaller than Boston. Much smaller. Boston is huge.
Boston's a college town with a harbor. Don't let it fool you. Like, it's not that big.
I haven't been to Boston yet.
Cardiff is also a college town with a harbor. So maybe it is like Boston. But basically, there's this pub called Porter's, and they it's in a really strange place. It's underneath train tracks, and it's got like this outside area that's super industrial and
it's so cool.
It's one of the main music venues there, really. You always do like gigs at Porter's, or you do open mic night at Porter's, and it's like so close to the university, and everybody loves it. And then they were going to shut it down, I think. I don't know if it was a big company or if it was the city, but somebody was trying to or had bought that building and they were going to like tear it all down and build up something new. And they rebelled so hard. And I think it was like 2 years, 2 or 3 years that this was going on, probably 2 years. And they were saying, oh, we might have to move and we're looking for a place to move to. And I think they're allowed to stay now. I think they managed to stay.
I'm thinking that's what's going to happen with the Viper Room because it's weird. It's very strange because there's all these petitions going on right now trying to stop it. And there's all this stuff going on trying to save the Viper Room. But then at the same time, there are booking agents that are booking at the Viper Room and kind of using it as leverage. Like, don't you want to play the Viper Room one last time?
Yeah.
And then all these bands are like, oh, I'm going to play the Viper Room before it closes. It could be like last gig at the Viper Room. So it's weird. It's like the music industry here on the one hand is trying to save the Viper Room, but then on the other hand, it's also like kind of using the fact that it's closing down as marketing leverage.
But yeah.
It's very strange. Very, very LA.
Are they also using it like, so we won't pay you because, you know, it's like a privilege to play there, or how does that work?
I have some thoughts about one of the main booking agents at the Viper Room. It's actually been like very difficult, and she has made things very difficult for some people to book there, and has gotten very aggressive with a lot of local bands. And yeah, it's basically one of those deals. It went from being like the Viper Room itself saying, you'll never have to pay to play here. We'll just do a door deal, which, you know, they'll give you like a percentage of whatever the door makes, to this person coming in and kind of monopolizing on the booking there and being like, oh, well, you have to pay me for 20 tickets. So you have to pay her $200. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah. But the way she spins it is, oh, well, you know, if you sell 25 tickets, then I'm just taking that 20 ticket cut from you. And then you get to keep everything after that.
It's still pay for play, though.
It's pay to play. It's pay to play. Like the way they swing it is they're like, well, you should be able to sell these many tickets. And it's like, okay.
Yeah,
because it's the Viper Room also. So it's like, say she'll give you 50 tickets to sell. And she's like, okay, well, the first 20, I'm keeping all the money from that. And if you don't sell 20 tickets, you still owe me the money.
Yeah, exactly.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially a lot of places do percentages.
In one of these quotation marks, if it's only 50 tickets and you take 20 of that, that's a huge cut.
Yeah. That's huge. It's between $200 and $300. That you have to pay up front. Like you literally have to walk in the venue, and before they let you load in, you have to pay that money in cash.
Exactly. In percentage wise, it's 40%.
It's a lot. Yeah. So, and I have to say, a lot of venues don't do that around here. You know, Venice West, where I played January 24th, they are fantastic. They just do a straight 50-50 door split with everybody, which is very fair. I'm totally fine with that. I understand that a venue needs to take a cut. But yeah, I basically, I don't know if I'll be able to play the Viper Room again, because I came to her calmly because I had been bringing her bands, and every band I had brought her was telling me that she was getting very angry and aggressive with them. And you know, I came to her kind of calmly and I was like, hey, I don't know what's going on with you, but like something is, you know, I've been having a lot of bands have complaints about you. And she pulled me from one of my gigs for bringing it up to her.
Oh my God.
And was just like, you'll never play here again. And I'm like, oh, okay. Wow.
It's so funny weird. This is a woman that we're talking about.
Yeah. It's very, very so strange. So.
Is that something... I mean, this is speculation, but, you know, does she do it because she needs to be one of the boys and she needs to be super aggressive like they are, and otherwise she's not taken seriously? Or is this something else? I don't know.
I think it might have, like you know, to the discussion of the podcast, I think it does have something to do. You'll see this a lot with certain women in the industry or femme-presenting people in the industry where they will get quite aggressive and cutthroat because they feel that they have to, especially the older folks, they will feel like they have to fight for their place in the industry. Mm-hmm. And they will feel like they have to, they'll feel like they have to, work twice as hard and really like throw people under the bus or be super aggressive because they have gotten it, you know, in their heads due to patterns and due to like, you know, proof being in the pudding in the industry that, that they will not make it the way that men can make it. Mm-hmm. So it's unfortunate that some people do get jaded and they do get really angry about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's really interesting. I hope you find
some... Well, that's a tea on the Viper Room right now. Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, no. No, it is what it is. I mean, you know, I've played there enough times that I'm like, I'm okay with it. Like, I could just like go and see my friends play, but still, I'm like, it's really wild.
And
I hope it does too.
Yeah. Maybe it'll work because I can't see, honestly, that building on top of it or even building it new and integrating a club into the bottom. That would take a really good architect to sound engineer that, and it's
the thought.
It's not good. You get transmission over the sides, and it's horrible.
It's like, can you imagine living on the first or second floor? That place gets loud.
You'd have to have like a complete cut. You'd have to have it like as a separate building or something. It wouldn't work.
People aren't going to buy that.
Well, you can do it. Like, I'm sorry, I started studying architecture 1.5 years ago, so I'm just kind of thinking about it. I love architecture.
Lay it on me.
So basically, you can do it, but the way
sound happens. What would you do, Micah, to soundproof a club under your big high-rise building?
Well, I would build it separately, honestly, because if you have to, you can do it without building it as separate entities, but you have to like engineer it really intelligently, and if anybody fucks up anywhere, like on the tiniest level, you will hear it throughout the entire building, like you will. So the easiest thing to stop having, because minor fuck ups will inevitably happen, the easiest thing to stop that is to build it as a completely separate unity that has like some sort of things there that you can
pillars,
exactly. So you kind of just raise it above and have the pillars not be touching any of the elements of the club, and that way you only have to deal with the sound that is actually sound waves and not vibration. The waves that go through building, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. So basically you have to like have the high rise on pillars and then the club inside underneath.
Yeah.
It sounds like a nightmare. They should just leave the Viper Room and refab the Viper Room itself. Yeah.
Okay. But that's too much architecture talk. So
this is not an architectural podcast.
No.
Are we sure?
pretty sure.
It's a side podcast club building.
It's power for women, right? Women can do interested in
it. We can do it all.
Exactly. So why don't you tell us what's happening for you as an artist right now? What's going on? Any projects you're working on?
Yes, my album comes out on March 3rd. And I just had a single drop on July 1st. And I did do a collaboration with Philip Lassiter, who was, you guys might have remembered him from my last podcast, Golden Poppy Family. Horn arranger and player for Prince, you know, very successful in his own right. He's worked with like Ariana Grande and all kinds of, you know, huge artists. And he went in on my last single called One Step, and he played horns on it, which was super cool. And it's actually the opener for the album. So the album itself is meant to be listened to cohesively. It's meant to be listened to from start to finish because it tells a whole story. And it's about really leaving kind of a dysfunctional codependent relationship, coming into yourself, and then being able to find like real love again. And it's this really, I don't know, it's something I'm really proud of. I do find it like kind of hard to like talk up my own stuff. So I manage other artists and talk up other artists, but I am really, really proud of this. And I produced it myself as well.
Nice.
Which is, it's the first time I really did that. I learned from Fernando Perdomo, who produced my last album, and you know how many times I have sent songs back and forth to him to make sure that they sounded right, and just everything I've learned from him over the years of like being his friend, being his collaborator, is incredible. He played bass on one or two songs. I have A. Michael Collins playing drums on most of it. I have Musical Dunk from Mob Blues and JJX and Golden Poppy playing drums on a couple tunes as well. Yeah. And then, you know, God, there's this big choir piece at the end that it has like local bands that I know.
What?
Oh yeah. There's a choir at the end, and I did a full string section too.
This is huge.
So I did not fuck around with this album. Like I really went hard. And it's all just things I've learned from people, you know, like the I was able to arrange the string section because I took Phil Lasseter's horn arranging class. So I basically took what I learned from the horn arranging class and transferred it to a string arrangement and did all of that. So
That's very impressive. That's really impressive.
There's everything from like musicians I've worked with to people I've been friends with forever. My mom is on there. My best friend's on there. My ex-girlfriend's on there. Like there's so many people.
That's so cool.
My current partner is obviously on there. Like, it's really good. So.
And I like how you've integrated like indeed like all the things you've learned and then, you know, you're putting this all together and integrating all the artists you're working with and that you like yourself. And then, how many songs is it?
11.
11. Okay. Everybody needs to go listen to this album by the CT.
Yes. It's called Come Home to Yourself. Yeah.
Come Home to Yourself. Oh, all right.
That's a great title.
We're going to link it in the show notes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And, definitely going to link it below.
And which about the producing? So which software do you use?
Honestly, I'm going to tell you a secret. I did the whole thing on GarageBand.
Ooh.
I did the whole thing on GarageBand. I'm not going to lie. Because a lot of it was not like a million tracks. I did like modulating and I did like a bunch of stuff, but I really was able to just get everything I needed on GarageBand.
That's amazing.
I thought about like getting an external hard drive and doing Pro Tools and whatever, but it's just the software I was really, really comfortable with. And it is like baby Pro Tools.
Yeah,
it has most of what I need, and
it's Logic. Logic is pretty good. I use Logic too. So it's
I went in. Most of what I do, a lot of the instruments that I record with are live, plug in and play.
Yeah,
the drums are tracked. All the drums are real. All the drums are tracked live. Like the only MIDI on it is like some keys and piano and the strings. But yeah, everything else was just like either mic'd or plugged in direct. So it's a very, very, it's like a live sounding thing.
That's
good. Did you record those things in like a studio environment? Did you have soundproofing? Or because a lot of this can, even it, like the plug and play, obviously that's a little bit different, but the drums, you have to mic them up and have it all sound right.
Yes. Drums are something I am not super comfortable with. So the drums I went in and I sent out to my drummers who are like pro. A. Michael Collins is who when I play in the CTs and I play live, I call it like my little A squad. I have him and Fernando Perdomo on bass backing me up. So I had him on a lot of drums and then I had Musical Dunk from Mob Blues and JJX on a lot of things as well. So they had like the full studio setup and the proper drums.
Yeah.
So the drums sound really good. The guitar, like I said, I batched in. The vocals I was able to do at home, which was actually kind of nice. I liked recording at home because a lot of the subject matter was very intimate and a lot of the songs were very vulnerable and very personal. So the fact that I was able to record most of it in the comfort of my home was really great.
Yeah.
You know,
and guitar is you playing as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. All guitar and all vocals are me. And most of the piano there's an interlude that is a little bit of my partner on piano and a little bit of me on piano, but most of the piano, guitar, vocals and bass is all me.
Except for the choir. That's not all you.
Yeah, the choir is not all
you. Did you do like a TikTok one where you went like covered your nose and did different voices?
I've done that. I did that. It works. It
works.
Well, because like, I don't know if I mentioned that last time I was on with you guys, but like, I'm like an opera trained singer and I'm like a vocal instructor too.
Yeah.
So it's not on this album, but it'll be on the next album. There's a tune that I did where I created a full choir and it was a full SATB arrangement. And I had three voices in each one and they're all me resonating from different parts of my head and pronouncing things differently. So it sounds like all these different people and like pitching my voice lower for certain things.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it was so fun. I'm like, how different? I was like, how different can I make my voice sound?
Yeah.
And it was just a super fun little experiment. And I did that a little bit on Slipping, which came out a little while ago now, but that's the first single off this album. That one, there's this really cool little hook at the end that's like, da, 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 and that's like a little four part. That's all me. So
cool. Yeah, yeah, I did that for Phoenix. There's like this this horde of people singing, and it's actually just all me.
It's all you? Yeah. That's so cool. I love that.
But I've obviously like done them in mainly my voice, I feel. And I think the most thing I've done on songs that are actually out, probably like three or four parts. But I have written songs that are like so many parts, and I've done all the vocals, and it's so nice. You can create your own little choir.
Yeah, it's fun.
I love it. Because then you record them all, and then you finally open it up and you just listen to the choir, and you're just like, wow.
This came out so much better than I expected.
Exactly. So now that I EQ'd it, it sounds like really professional.
Okay, but do tell. So what does your mom do on your album?
Oh, there is an interlude on the album. It's a guitar interlude called Jasmine. And the beginning of it is voice memos from people.
Okay.
Like giving me, like people who gave me like a lot of advice and whatever. And so my mom, right before the guitar kicks in, she has this really great thing that she says. She goes, "When one door closes, another one opens, but it sure sucks when you're walking in the hallway. But no matter what, everything is in perfect divine order." And then the guitar kicks off.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. And I just, that was just something she, yeah, that was something she said to me. And I was like, can you please like just record this into your phone and send it over to me?
Yeah.
So I have like her and my best friend in there. And then my friend Kristen is in there too.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody really nice. Go listen to it now.
Yes, please. Get me those sweet, sweet streams. Give me those sweet, sweet penny fractions.
Well, yeah. what is in your future? What is your, because you were already talking about a next album.
The next album, yeah. Yes.
God, yeah, because I'm an animal and I can't stop. So I start, like, I was finishing recording this one and I was already like writing songs for the next one, and I'm just like, oh well, this is coming out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know when the next one will come out. I'm really just gonna like push this one for now. Lots of performances. Honestly, I am in a place right now where I'm not trying to manifest the next thing. I'm just trying to manifest the next feeling. I'm just trying to manifest like my music doing its highest good and doing exactly what it needs to do. Because as I've been doing that, that's when all these beautiful opportunities have come about. So I'm just really letting that kind of ride right now. And I'm just letting things happen, because this past 2022 was beyond anything I could have ever imagined for myself. And it was like, if you'd have asked me mid 2021 what 2022 would look like, I would have had no idea that, like, I would have been so off. You know, I would have been so off base in what I thought it was going to be. Mm-hmm. And my life has become something, and my career has become something beyond what I could have even imagined. So I'm just going to keep going with that. Yeah. I'm just going to keep giving it up to the universe and being like, you just let me do whatever I'm supposed to do.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I've been getting a lot of session work too, which has been really cool. I've been hopping in with a lot of people
on guitar,
and, you know, on guitar and vocals. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's yeah.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been really fun doing that. So I love working with other musicians. So, you know, if anybody's listening, feel free to hit me up, because I love doing session work. So
yeah. Also, yes. I wanted to ask another question, because you were saying that you liked recording at home because the songs were so emotional and so close to your heart. So do you, like, how are you going to sing them on stage if you...
I have been. I have been. And it's I don't know what it is. I think it's because I've been performing from such a young age. Like, I think I started performing when I was like 8. And I don't know. I just feel very at home on stage. It feels like a very safe space for me. Mm-hmm. And I know going up on stage that what I'm putting out, you know, is true to form, and what I'm putting out is true to who I am. So when I get up there, I just go up and try to be honest. And because I know if I go in with any fear of like, oh, what are people going to think, that it's not going to be as good as it is if I go in confident in what I have.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. it was more the getting it out and getting it onto, you know, onto the recording that was vulnerable. And then when I listen back, I'm like, hey, this isn't half bad. Like, then I can go and perform it a lot easier.
Yeah.
But the writing.
You've done it so many times now because of the recording. You're mm-hmm. more comfortable going into that space again. Yeah, I get that.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about this album was that with my first album, Resilient, it was a collection of songs I had already written and honed in on. This I was writing while I was recording, and I was recording while I was writing. Like, I'd write a song, go get it down, like as it was all coming, which was a new process for me. And it actually allowed me to expand upon the songwriting more. But just the getting it out was such a vulnerable process for me because I was recording while I was writing, as opposed to like getting it tight, yeah, going to studio
I get
with
that.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also because you're still in the emotion of writing it and kind of being in the vulnerable space of writing, that it kind of, you know, it makes it all a lot more fresh.
Yes. Yeah, I was really happy with especially the vocal performances mm-hmm. on it because of that reason, because they were very, a lot of them were very like in the moment and very much what I was feeling.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. It's
way to do it. Yeah. Okay. I've also only written so, and then, you know, you write something and it's finished, and then X months later you have to go and record it, and it's not the same, is it?
It's
yeah, you're
not
in that space. Mm. Yeah, I preferred that. Yeah, so it was because it was a hell of a year, you know. It was like I said, I got divorced, I came out as non-binary, and it was just like a lot of emotions processing.
Yeah, and how has that been for you to come out as non-binary?
It's been really good. It was kind of like I was wearing clothes. Oh, sorry. There's the LA sirens. There we go. I liken it to my whole life I'd been wearing clothes that didn't fit, and I didn't really realize it until I started being like, oh, are other people not this uncomfortable all the time? And then when I finally came out as non-binary, and especially when I changed my pronouns and I really told everybody in my life, it was like I finally, like, almost like I took off a corset, you know, and I was like, oh my god, this is how people feel all the time. People actually feel comfortable in their skin like this all the time. So now it's like I could never go back. I could never go back. And then anytime somebody does like misgender me or whatever, it feels like I'm trying to get shoved back in those clothes. Mm-hmm. You know? So
yeah. How do you handle that? What do you say when people misgender you?
I mean, most of the time it's just like a soft correction. Most people, like, especially the people in my life, will do it themselves. I have had a couple pushbacks. This one man, of course, one time was just like, oh, well, I don't really get all of that, you know, like, oh, I don't really get all of that. So whatever.
Cause
he called me. Yeah, he called me a girl. So I was like, oh, well, I'm not a girl, actually. And he's like, oh, well, you know, I don't really get all of that, so I'm just going to, like, call you by your name or something. Mm-hmm. He's like, so I don't say anything about it. I'm like, so here you are saying something about it.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, like, here you are saying, I don't get it, so I'm not going to spout my opinion about it. It's like, but yet here you are spouting your opinion. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, other than that, it hasn't been, luckily I am surrounded by a lot of people who are understanding and accepting, you know, it's some explaining has had to happen with some people, but other than that, it's, it is what it is. I don't get like too upset about it most of the time because I am aware of what I look like. I am aware that upon first perception, people are going to assume. And you know, it is what it is. And then most of the time after I correct it, there's not really a problem.
Okay. So, that's cool.
Okay. Yeah,
that's good.
It is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to plug or say
anything I want
to the listeners and viewers?
Yeah, no, I think I covered everything. Go stream the new album. Go check out Golden Poppy artists. They're all insanely badass. You know, go listen to them all. They're wonderful. Go to goldenpoppymusic.com. You know, and you can find us all there.
All right. Well, we'll.
And if any artists out there need help, or any artists out there even just have a question, feel free to contact me. You know?
Yeah. Cool. Yes. Well, we're going to put your contact details in the show notes too.
That'd be great. Definitely. Yeah.
All right. All right. Micah, hit it with the outro.
Yes. All right. So that's all for today. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of Unboxing Women. If you've ever had an experience you'd like to share with us, send us a DM or tag us in your post with the hashtag #suchabitch, or send us an email on suchabitch@unboxingwomen.com. Don't forget to drop us a like on Instagram or wherever you're listening. My name is Micah Rose and I've been chatting with Dana Rex and Michaela G. Jordan. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Michaela.
Of course.
Tune in to another episode of Unboxing Women next week, guys. And if you want to connect with Michaela, be sure to check out their socials, which you can find in the show notes below. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you soon. Bye.
Bye. Bye.